you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
You have entered the Twilight Histories, an audio adventure that casts you as the hero. You will travel to strange, exotic worlds in the multiverse. A Carthaginian base on Mars, Egypt locked in an ice age, a Roman Empire that never fell. With the help of music and sound effects, in each episode, you will be immersed in a world out of time. Today, you will explore 15th century Burgundy, like you've never seen it before, if you've ever seen it. As the Twilight Histories has been diving headlong into the realm of weird tales lately, this totally strange story by Aaron Lund is going to leave you questioning reality. There is a bonus story available to our Patreon supporters, and I'll play a sample of that at the end of the show, so don't change the channel. You're going to want to hear what comes next. And now, for today's weird tale, this is Oubliette by Aaron Lund.
Hello, oh wow. You're already in costume. You must be ready to get underway. Well, not to worry. Getting here is the hard part. You'll be up to your knees in courtly intrigue before you know it. Don't forget, that whole trunk is yours to take, actually. This will be your longest stint with us yet, if I'm not mistaken. 30 days and out. It wouldn't do to run out of clean underthings. I recommend finding a nice, secluded spot on that last day, by the way, unless you want to make a really dramatic exit. When they say out, they mean out. Okay, so you wanted the royal treatment. High-stakes politics, nobles, royals, fancy clothes, backroom dealings, looks fraught with meaning at formal dances and glittering ballrooms. But you also want it to be a vacation, something with more of a dinner and a show feel to it, without all the stress of audience participation. To that end, we're sending you to 15th century Burgundy. Charles the Bold managed to get his way in this timeline, winning the Battle of Nancy and, well, anyway. The TLDR is there's a kingdom of Burgundy, with Charles its first king. For a minute. He died not long after. Now there's a kerfuffle about the succession, and that's the setting for all your high-tension drama. We're placing you with Arnaud, a hanger-on of one of the king's hangers-on. Close enough to the action that you'll soak up your fill, not so close you'll get noticed. Know what I mean? You'll have some light duties, but hey. If you didn't want to get your hands a little dirty, you could have stayed home with a VR rig, am I right? If you'd like a little change of pace, though, there is some particularly exquisite stained glass to be seen. A tour of the cathedral would be well worth it. Tapestries, too. Keep a lookout for those around the castle. Something about the dyes in this world, I guess. Luminous. Also, there was an anthropology team particularly excited about the high saturation of fairy lore coming out of this place, if you're into that kind of thing. Anyway, they're ready for you. Watch your step, and enjoy your vacation! Two days. Two friggin' days, and you're already out of the game. A day and a half, really. Perhaps those nitwits at Twilight Histories underestimated the level of paranoia there'd be during the succession. After all, both king and kingdom had only been a few years going before the mysterious death of King Charles I of Burgundy. Princess Mary, being the sole trueborn child, only makes everything more tense. In any case, there's been much more scrutiny of the people coming into the palace and the surrounding town than the agents had anticipated. You'd barely settled into the meager apartments raided by the middling retainer you were planted with before two surly men in royal livery had escorted your benefactor right out the door again for a conversation. You guess Arnaud wasn't cut out for intrigue after all, because they were back for you less than an hour later. Must be some kind of record. You straighten up from the slouch in which you've been pouting, stretch some of the stiffness out of your arms, and take yet another inventory of the room, hoping against hope that something's changed. Same dim light coming through the same high window, highlighting a small spot on the same damp floor strewn with the same straw. Well, not the same straw, you have to concede, given how far the spotlight has traveled since they tossed you in here. But this new bit of straw is just as soiled. You're grateful for the window, even if it is little more than a peephole. You're not much of a fan of dark, cramped spaces. Arnaud hasn't changed much either. Same white-knuckled fist bunched into the same doughy face, propped at the elbows on the same crossed-legged knees. Stopped sobbing, though, which is something, but not enough to assuage your anger. Just look at him, that face, that stupid, punchable face, which, now that you are looking at it, looks decidedly unpunched. Did he even try to hold out? "Hey, Arnaud," you whisper shout. "What the hell happened? I thought you were supposed to be able to talk your way out of this kind of stuff." No movement on Arnaud's part. You try again, speaking normally this time. "Seriously, guy, come on. I saved up for 2 years to be here, and I'm not even remotely getting my money's worth." You snap your fingers a few times. "Hello? Is anyone in there? Arnaud, I'm just... Look, it seems like you caved really fast. It can't have been torture. There's not a mark on you. So what am I doing spending my vacation in?" I was doing all right," Arnaud interrupts with a slight quaver in his voice. "Talking my way out of it, I mean." "Okay, what then?" you ask. "They showed me the implements," he says, as if he himself doesn't quite believe it. "What are you talking about? Implements?" Arnaud just kind of shakes his head in your direction, then returns it to its prior position, perched atop his clenched fists. "Great," you say, getting to your feet. "Super helpful." You dust off the seat of your whatever this is you're wearing, and set off for the other side of the cell, hoping to burn off some nervous energy. 4.5 paces, about face, and blam! The door bursts open. 2 burly louts step in, grab you by an arm apiece, and manhandle you out the door. Whole thing takes a matter of seconds. It was a mere few paces, after all. You're dragged, more than led, down further flights of stairs toward what you imagine must be an even more dungeony dungeon cell than the previous one. No windows here, peepholes or otherwise, just the occasional sputtering torch ensconced in crude, shallow alcoves. At the bottom of the stairway is another heavy wooden door. They burst through this one as well, calling you along with. "Geez, guys, you ever think, maybe try the knob?" You're rewarded for your feeble attempt at humor with a generous smack upside your head. You've probably had worse, actually, but you weren't ready for it, and it leaves your ears ringing. You're wrangled into a stout wooden chair with some kind of metal cuffs built into the armrests. Once you're secured, the 2 guards step back to either side and stand at attention. After a few minutes of silence, your head begins to clear and you scan the room. You can't really see behind you as the back of your chair is too high and wide. By design, you imagine. To your left and right, more stone walls, a torch aglow on both sides making the small space rather well lit. Before you sits a long wooden table about waist high, were you to be standing. Upon the table lays a rectangle of leather, roughly about 1 meter long and half as much deep. The leather is bumpy, with peaks and valleys delineating an assortment of different objects beneath it. These would be the implements, then. You hear light footsteps and a soft swishing of fabric behind you, followed by the gentle closing of the door. Seems someone knows a method of entering a room other than bursting into it. A slight man walks around the far side of the table, places his palms flat upon the surface, and works his face into a thoughtful squint in your direction. Okay, this is it. Let him do the talking. Don't offer up anything. The less said, the better. Normally, we have the luxury of working a little, pageantry into this kind of thing. But I'm afraid we don't have the time for that just now. I'm sure you can guess why. Stay clammed up. Wait for an actual question. We have from your benefactor that you are a very recent addition to his household. This, in itself, is no concern to us, of course. Servants come and go. It is no great surprise. You focus on a spot in the center of his forehead. Look confused, not guilty. Self-assured, not defiant. We were, however, interested to learn that your master took you on at the behest of a mysterious stranger and large sums of gold. That does look bad, you admit to yourself, but it still wasn't a question, so you keep your mouth shut. Nothing to say, eh? Well, as I've said, we have little time. He pinches a corner of the leather, pulling it aside slowly but steadily to reveal what lays beneath. Oh, those implements. The varied and sundry straps, clamps, and general blood-crusted pointy things has the effect of pushing all the crap you were giving our node for caving so fast right out of your head, along with the rest of your cover story. A worryingly manic laugh escapes you. Hey, wow! This is getting way too intense. I came here for some courtly intrigue, you know? High-level politics? Some brazen power plays, backroom maneuverings, a few quiet backstabbings, or, metaphorical ones. This is supposed to be my vacation, see? The slight man looks as though he very much does not see. You continue, talking ever faster but unable to slow yourself down. Okay, look, yes, our node was paid to take me along, but not by plotters. They were more like, travel agents, right? You know, they book passage, arrange accommodations, maybe a reservation at a restaurant or tickets to a show. For fun, see? I'm not even from here. I'm from a whole other world where all this stuff... You gesture vaguely at everything. All this stuff is ancient history. I'm from the future. I'm not here to meddle in your business, but like education and entertainment. Edutainment! You trail off while screwing your face into what you hope is a pleasant smile, but feels more like rigor mortis setting in. The slight man appraises you for a long beat, unreadable. Finally, he looks beyond you to the guards. Did one of you strike this prisoner? Exactly how hard did you hit this prisoner?
Well, comes a voice from somewhere behind you. No harder than usual.
No harder than... says the slight man, coming out from behind the table. Get out here, the both of you! The guards follow him out the door, which slams shut behind them. You hear various murmurings, but can't make out many words. Before long, there's a final exclamation from what must be your interrogator, followed by light footfalls disappearing quickly. The door bursts open once again, unsurprisingly, and before you know it, you're out of the chair and headed back the way you came, being dragged in much the same fashion. Alarmed at the abrupt change in tactics, you ask, "What's happening? Am I going back to the cell?"
"Well, the thing is," says one of the guards, suddenly gregarious, "you being mad puts his lordship in a bad spot."
"Mad? You think I'm crazy? I'm not crazy!"
"Or, punch drunk."
He has the grace to look at least a little sheepish.
"Either way, he's not going to get anything useful out of you. But he can't let you go raving throughout the city, either. Not now, anyway."
"What does that mean? Where are you taking me?" you ask, with anachronistic visions of guillotines flooding your mind.
"His lordship feels it's best to keep you out of the way, where you can do no harm. So it's the oubliette for you."
"Oubliette? What's that? Does it remove heads?"
"What? No, no, it's like a dungeon, only more dungeony. Oh, you say, reserving your relief until you have a better sense of what that means. You retrace your steps back towards the cell you'd shared with Arnaud for half a minute longer, before coming to a halt in front of a tapestry. There's barely enough time for you to note some strange, frolicking figures stitched out on the textile before it's flicked aside by the guard, revealing a narrow door secreted behind it. They bundle you through the door, without the usual bursting this time, which is mildly worrying if you're honest. Having geared yourself up for the worst, it's almost a letdown to see something like an ordinary cellar. A bit dank and musty, to be sure, but no worse than the cell you were sharing with Arnaud. No window, though, which is worrying until one of the minions ducks out into the hall, comes back with a torch, and sticks it in a sconce just inside the cellar next to the door. Maybe you can handle this after all. How long do I have to stay in here? You ask. Do you know? Will someone bring fresh torches? I don't like the dark or cramped, spaces. You trail off at the end as you look into the face of the guard who'd gotten the torch. You can't quite place the expression. Incredulity? Pity? Either way, you don't like it. Finally, he sighs, turns away, and fades into the gloom at the far end of the cellar. It's hard to make out, but he seems to be wrestling with some kind of cabinet or shelving built into the rough stone wall. After a few minutes of frustrated grunts, the groans of wood joinery under duress, and heavy stone scrapings you feel in your bones as much as here, there's a final cry of triumph, and the cabinet seems to pop out of place to be scooted to one side. The goon comes back looking almost apologetic, gesturing to the gaping hole in the stonework revealed by his efforts.
It's this way, I'm afraid, he says.
There's something, some snarky remark or cutting jibe eager for deployment. It's what you're known for, after all, if only to yourself. Not just now, though. Oh, it's in there, somewhere. You can feel it slip from your grasp, fading, displaced by a leaden heart, heavy with the growing implication of that black ball. You want to resist, protest, or even scream incoherently, but even this last comes out as only a muffled, gagging sound. You manage to struggle, try and slip away, but the iron grips and strange, casual resolve of men who just want to get on with it already so they can get back to a room with a toasty fire and dry floors drag you inexorably onward. Your leaden feet scrape across the packed earth floor as you're maneuvered through the hole. To your further horror, they dip, first one, then the other, over an unseen edge. You aren't just going in, but down. The realization comes mere seconds before the vice grips release and you plummet screaming, finally finding your voice. Cold stone walls close in on you as you drop. Soon you're sliding as much as falling, your head bouncing back and forth between the slabs. Your feet strike something beneath you, bringing you to a jarring halt. Your knees buckle but don't have much room to bend, and slam into the wall before you. You feel the shock of it in your teeth, and for a moment your whole world shrinks to a pinpoint of pain.
Oh, gonna hurl. Oh, okay. Oh, no. No, you're okay.
As the pain recedes, you're left with the dire reality of your situation. There is no light. Those two absolute trolls must have replaced the cabinet and gone on with their lives. You scream in terror and frustration, but it's futile. You know that. This is your vacation now, if you can survive that long. You gather enough of your wits to run your hands along the walls, get a feel for things. You seem to be in some kind of crevice or narrow chute carved into the rock. You reach out to either side and brush cold stone with your fingertips. Front to back, you've got some wiggle room, but not enough to turn sideways. With care, you try to get a sense of whatever you struck beneath you. It has some give, whatever it is. It isn't rock. You search with your booted feet for, and you're not sure what, something. Anything that might present itself as useful. As you work your way to one side, you feel your perch shift downward. You come to a stop, even holding your breath on instinct, but it doesn't help.
Whatever it is, it moves, gives way, and you're sinking again. Your creeping descent only wedges you tighter in the narrowing gap between the stone slabs. You're gasping, almost hyperventilating in panic. You can't breathe. You can't breathe! As visions of your desiccated remains being pulled through the wormhole by the retrieval team crowd your overwrought mind, the very ground beneath you gives way. For a split second, you drop quickly, stopping only when your upper body is sandwiched too tightly to fall any further. This is it. You're gonna suffocate right here. Except, maybe. Through a haze of panic, you notice your legs pinwheeling in the air, looking for purchase. There's room down there, just beneath you, if you can just get through. Before you overthink it, you exhale the last of the wind in your lungs. You drop a few centimeters, and you know this is it. The only way you'll ever breathe again is to squeeze through this hole. You kick your legs with abandon, buying a few more centimeters. With scrambling hands, you push, pull, and clamber. Bit by bit, you struggle downward until just as you feel the edges of consciousness begin to get fuzzy, you're through and dropping into the void. Not for long, though. After what must only be a few meters, you crunch butt first into a pile of loose debris. You bounce sideways and tumble down a scree of what can only be the remains of the oubliette's previous occupants. You come to a halt against more cold stone, and for a moment there is only silence. Then it all catches up with you. You inhale with a gasp and return to screaming. Horror at what you just went through, relief that you're still alive, mounting dread at what may yet be to come. All erupts in wails, sobs, and maniacal laughter. That last bit, it turns out, is not all that funny when it's sincere. As your throat goes hoarse and your face grows slick with tears and snot, a strange kind of fatigue comes over you. Perhaps it's chemical, a come down from adrenaline. Perhaps it's psychological, a need to escape the reality of your situation, if only for a while. Either way, you find yourself curling up in thin layers of sandy grit and surrendering to a welcome unconsciousness. You awaken in the dark, disoriented and confused. Soon it all floats back up to the surface, like an incriminating body incorrectly disposed of. Oh dear God. You lay for a few minutes pining for those few blissful moments of ignorance between waking and remembering. Finally, you sit up to take stock of your situation. What else do you have to do? You're surprised to find that, other than some aches and scrapes, you're physically sound. Call that a win. Now, where the hell actually are you? Shuffling on your hands and knees, for some reason you just feel safer that way. You locate the corpse pile you landed on and begin to trace its edge. They don't stink as much as you feared. Must have dried out or something. You feel your way along a litter of long bones and musty clothes until you reach a spot where the pile butts up against the stone wall of whatever kind of chamber you're in. Is this a cave? You don't know. And it doesn't matter, you guess. From here, you follow the wall of the chamber, keeping one hand on it. Every so often, you come across a fissure or gap in the stone. Some no more than a crack, but some you might crawl through, if you were desperate enough to try. After you arrive at dry bones again, completing the circuit, you try to relocate your starting point. You didn't mark it in any way, though, so you settle on a best guess and lay down. Not for long, though. Restlessness overtakes you, and soon you're shuffling about again. You stumble upon a few slurps of gritty, stagnant water and half a dozen shallow dips and make short work of them. Should get your money's worth out of those inoculations, at least. That done, you find yourself wide awake with nothing to do. It's terrible, actually. You can't help but ruminate on the fact that you have no food, not enough water, and over 3 weeks till they pull you out. The math is inescapable. The notion just caroms around inside your cranium, unopposed by any kind of distraction. You find yourself fidgeting, changing position, tapping little beats out on your knees with the flats of your hands. Suddenly, you're hyper-aware of your body. Are those hunger pangs, or is something wrong? Have your legs always felt this jittery, or is that new? The sensations are almost alarming in their intensity, but they aren't as bad as what's going on in your head, so you just go with it. Your focus flows from your legs up your torso and down to your fingertips. There, it feels like you can sense your pulse in the skin of your fingers and palms. You follow the sensation up to the surface of your chest and face. Soon your whole head resounds with your heartbeat, and you realize you can actually hear the whoosh whoosh of the blood pumping through your veins. You're startled and amazed. You've never been anywhere quiet enough to even hint that such a thing was possible. After a while of listening to the vascular rhythm, you start to pick up another sound, or at least you think you do. It seems to be music, rhythmic, repetitive, almost choral. It reminds you of overnight visits to grandma's, probably the quietest place you've been till now. How the wee hours were cacophonies of hushed, white noises, the laundry going, the furnace rumbling, ceiling fans and what all. Sometimes you'd swear you heard music playing as if in a far-off room, through walls and closed doors. Rhythmic, repetitive, sometimes almost classical, sometimes more like metal, but always hinging on being just distinct or indistinct enough to make you unsure whether it was real or not. As you got older, you figured it was something to do with that white noise, but you never figured it could be conjured with your own heartbeat. If nothing else, this much is a singular experience. You lay still, listening to the phantom music until, after who knows how long, sleep finally overtakes you. You awaken to a sharp pain in your big toe. You reach down and feel warm moisture, blood. Not much, but enough to remind you of the big pile of bodies you dropped onto and come to the obvious conclusion, rats. Should have been expecting it. You strain your ears but don't hear any scuttling or anything. Must have run off when you jerked awake. What do you do? Searching them out would be pointless. There isn't really anything you can think of other than to just sit still and see what happens. You awaken to a sharp pain. You bring your hands up to your face and feel a fleeting hint of something warm and fuzzy. You investigate your searing nose, more blood this time, and there's a tiny notch in your right nostril. You must have fallen asleep. Alternating waves of fury and futility wash over you. You've got no food or water, and now you can't even sleep. What the hell are you supposed to do? For a while, you just sit there, paralyzed by sheer, impotent rage. Until you feel another nibble. On your other foot this time, you kick out wildly, achieving nothing other than losing balance and toppling over, despite being already seated. Clearly, the rats don't mind eating you alive. But now, they don't even need you to be asleep. If you just sit still long enough, they'll come after you. You're newly enraged, but you have an idea. You scoot to one side of the cavern, looking for a niche or hollow. You're in luck. There's a slight dip in the wall, and you back up into it, kneeling on the ground. You lean forward on your elbows, hands out, ready for grasping. You wait. You grow stiff and achy, then unbearably so. You yearn to stretch your legs. Your lower back is screaming, but you can't move. You're the bait, and if you move, you'll scare them off. Have to start over again anyway. Your mind tells you to give it a rest. Try again later. To stand up and walk it off, but you focus on your throbbing nose and allow sheer hatred to keep you crouching and wait a little bit longer. Little bit longer. Finally, you think you feel something around your lower leg, though it's hard to tell through the numbness. There, it's at your elbow now, working up the forearm. You feel a nibble and hold your breath. Careful. Careful. It bites again in the same place, and you allow a small twitch of your arm to shoo it away. It scurries off. So close. You're tempted to make a swipe for it, but there's no way you wouldn't whiff it. Not without eyes. You settle back in to wait. Seconds tick by, then minutes. Finally, it comes back, tentatively nudging the middle finger of your left hand. Yes. You send a silent prayer of thanks to whatever gods are available. This thing might just pay off. It bites, but not hard. Almost like it's testing. You don't react. Close, but not close enough. You need it to be committed, like a fish on a hook. You barely notice the aches and the numbness in your body now that you're so focused. Finally, after a few more nips, the rat chomps down hard. With its attention fully on taking a chunk out of one hand, it's almost shocking how simple it is to just scoop it up in the other. Success! You can scarcely believe it. The rat squirms and scratches and bites. It hurts, but not enough to mar your satisfaction. You laugh, and bellow in triumph. Screaming in the rat's face. When you finally tire of the rat's writhing and clawing, you grip its head in your left hand and twist. And continue to twist until it pops right off. The warm blood runs down your hands, and before you think about it, you're holding the little twitching body up to your mouth. As the blood reaches your belly, it calls to your attention just how hungry you are. You haven't eaten since well before you were tossed down here, and now it's telling. Before you can talk yourself out of it, you take one of the tiny forelegs between your teeth and pull. You crunch its delicate bones and find you're less disgusted than you thought you'd be. It hits your stomach and your appetite is only more whetted. You shrug, sigh, and tuck in. You lay on your back in the dark, hands behind your head. There's a little tickle in your throat, post-nasal drip. You cough and wonder, not for the first time, just how sick you'd be by now if that were actually possible. Once again, you dismiss the thought. You have enough problems without imagining new ones. You unfurl one arm to reach up and locate the arrow point formation of three rat heads that marks your true north, or what passes for it. Oof, there goes a cramp. The usual one in your upper back, just inside the shoulder blade. You sit up, trying to work it out, stretching your arms this way and that. Not the most pleasant routine that's developed, but at least it's something to do. You stretch the other side for symmetry, then go for the legs while you're at it, careful not to disrupt the formation. 14 rat heads encircle you, as evenly spaced as you can manage. The arrow point formation of three marks the direction you lay when you sleep. Asleep is your preferred mode of being, because being awake is oppressively boring, and you feel less hungry in your dreams. You don't know if you got them all, or they just learned to avoid you, but rat number 14 was your last meal. Hard to say how long ago that was, but your stomach insists it's been a while. So hungry. Thirsty, too. Most of what you had to drink is rat blood. Occasionally, enough water condenses on the cavern walls to drip into minuscule puddles, or be licked off the stone directly. It's not very sustaining, though. As you're reaching for your toes, the phantom music returns, choral again this time. It comes and goes as it pleases, varying in form. Sometimes a hard electric guitar riff, sometimes more percussive. Once there was almost a bluegrass feel to it, but it's at its most convincing when it's choral. Even now, if it weren't for your painful awareness of the reality of your circumstances, you'd swear there were actually people singing somewhere. Far off, perhaps. Far enough that all the voices blend together in one thin falsetto harmony. You leave off stretching and just listen. It's nice to have something to pay attention to, even if it is just some weird artifact of the hearing part of your brain or whatever. You just groove for a while, getting a feel for it. It's got a kind of imploring, almost beseeching quality to it. The more you listen, though, the more it hits you that you're not really getting those feels through tone or mood, but through narrative. You're picking up words, at least a little. Your translator chip must be catching a word or a phrase or a partial sentence here or there. Enough to give kind of an intuitive gist, but that means you have to be actually hearing something, right? You stand up, but too fast and you get a head rush. After a few woozy steps in no particular direction, you decide it's best to sit down again. As your head clears, you feel, well, you're not sure. Are those real voices? Are there people nearby? You can't tell if the feeling welling up in the pit of your stomach is excitement or dread, and settle on plain anxiety, splitting the difference. You stand up again, more slowly this time, and listen carefully. Where is it coming from? You're about to call out. If you can hear them, maybe they can hear you. But something holds you back. What if you call out and they stop? You'd never locate them then. Even worse, what if it's not real at all? You're surprised at how desperate you are to cling to this new notion, even if it is a delusion. No, if you're going to let yourself down, at least do it slowly. You meander around the chamber, cocking your head this way and that, trying to pinpoint an origin, a general direction, anything. No good. Once it enters the chamber, it must just bounce around too much or whatever. But where is it coming from? You scramble up the corpse pile as far as you dare, thinking maybe it's wafting in the same way you did. If your panicked scrambling can be considered wafting, it's a bust. But thinking about the claustrophobic chute you squirmed through reminds you of the fissures you encountered during your initial investigation. On your hands and knees, you check the perimeter until, yes, right here, it's louder. Not much, but maybe you're not hearing things after all. What now? Call out? Maybe, but you'd still rather not. Not till you know what you're dealing with. What then? You run your hand along the fissure's edge, trying to gauge its width and depth. Probably wide enough to squeeze through. As for depth, well, there has to be another end to this thing where the singing is coming from, right? Right? Right. You start stripping down, placing each garment in a pile against the wall. You'll be cold, but you'd rather risk a chill than getting snagged on something and stuck somewhere deep under. The thought gives you the heebie-jeebies. Best not to dwell on it. You take a few deep breaths, psyching yourself up, and start snaking your way into the fissure. Ooh, boy. Yeah, it's, snug. You remember thinking you'd have to be desperate to try and wiggle through one of these mere cracks in the bedrock, and, well, here you are. Ironic, though. The time you spent down here, basically starving and going stir-crazy enough to even attempt such an idiotic thing, is also probably what's making it possible. You never would have fit past your belly. The raw rat diet. You'll write a book. Ah! You inchworm along, grasping and pushing with your hands and feet where you can. Feeling ahead, you can tell it narrows a bit, and a pinpoint of dread in your solar plexus expands. You gotta push forward before it overtakes you. You press on. Can you outrun a panic attack? Sure hope so. Your fingers land in something soft. A thin, fuzzy layer spread like butter across the stone.
Even after all your time without sight, your instinct is to draw your hand back to look. To your surprise, you can see it. A few fingers, anyway. Sketched out in tiny, phosphorescent dots and smears against the black. Some kind of bioluminescent fungus? Peering ahead, you see a dim haze, glow stick green, like Halloween on the lowest setting. Definitely excited now, you forge ahead. It gets lighter as you progress, the milky green more saturated. It seems to emanate from the strange mossy stuff growing on the surrounding rock. It grows thicker as the fissure widens into more of a tunnel. You can practically crawl now. You come to a bend, nearly 90 degrees. It's tricky to navigate, so you don't notice the drastic increase in brightness until you're all the way through and nearly blinded by it. Holy what? This whole time? The tunnel widens out into a large cavern that has to be twice as large as the one you left, though honestly it's hard to gauge. Maybe it goes on forever. The weird moss emits the sickly phosphorescence wherever it grows, which is kind of everywhere. Ceilings, walls, most of the ground. It's all one uniform glow, creating an eerie, pearlescent day-glow murk. You look at your hands. They're filthy! Look at your beautiful, filthy hands. In the back of your mind, you know you'd probably have trouble reading a book in light so dim, but to your beleaguered eyes, it may as well be noon. Gratitude washes over you, followed closely by resentment and self-reproach for it taking so long to find this place. Never mind. For a while, you just sit, delighting in the ghostly world around you. Until you notice the silence. Where did that lilting chorus go? When did it stop? Was it ever real? Honestly, who cares? You're here now. You stand up, brushing your head against the soft moss. Wow, really hard to estimate distance in this light, even within just a couple meters. Still, it's a nice problem to have, considering. Oh, but what's this? A new sound. A staccato trilling. So high and fast it takes a moment to realize that it's some kind of percussion. There's no echo, with the moss soaking up sound before it can bounce around. It doesn't lack for volume, though it isn't hard to locate. You creep along, making sure to step on the mossy areas. Coming to a gentle rise, you drop to all fours so as to peek over the top with discretion. It's more dim on the other side, so it's hard to tell what you're seeing. The moss must not grow as well over here, and there's a wide swath on the ground, devoid of light. No, that's not quite right. There is light, but instead of the low, pervasive glow, there's a single pinpoint, zipping around the bare patch in circles and oblongs like a firefly. As your eyes adjust, you can discern more pinpoints, less intense, grouped around the first one at the edge of the patch. Finally, you can see that they're figures. For the life of you, it looks like a single dancer with a flame coming out of its head, circled by more, holding dimmer lights. You can't make out the drummers, but they must be there somewhere. Loud as hell, too, given how far away they must be. How big is this cavern, anyway? Your previous caution crumbles under the weight of your relief in finding other people, even weird, mysterious ones. Whatever they're up to has got to be better than eating rats by the corpse pile. You stand up and call out, "Hello?" The moss seems to eat the sound, your voice coming out flat. Loud enough, though, because far off and way down below your little rise, it all comes to an abrupt halt. "Hey!" you yell, taking a step down the gentle slope. I'm trapped down here! Is there a way out? Please!" The firefly dots of light start buzzing around. Worried they're about to scatter, you start forward, thinking to break into a run. Can't lose them. Ouch! There's a stinging pain in your thigh. You stop and reach down. There's something poking out of the skin. Like a stick? Did you run into something? You grab it, pull. Ow! Deeper than you thought. Very straight for a stick. You look closer. What the? You wipe the blood away from the end, revealing a dull, metallic glint. Is that bronze? It's a spear. A miniature spear. You look down the slope and the lights are gone, but you're close enough now to see the figures themselves, silhouettes in the dingy green. Holy crap. They're tiny! How could you not see it before? The weird shadowless light? The sound dampening moss? And anyhow, why wouldn't you think regular-sized people far away instead of little garden gnomes right up close? Judging by the length of the spear, they can't be taller than, like, three apples stacked on top of each other. You must have scared them senseless, coming up on them like that. Hey, you say more quietly, feeling bad. I didn't mean to. Ouch! Another sting, this time right next to your eye. You pluck the object, smaller than the last, with minuscule feather fletching at one end. An arrow. No. Nope. Absolutely not. You mother, you yell, sprinting forward. I've been dumped in a dark hole, left to starve. I ate rats. Rats, you scream. I am not getting shot in the face by a freaking garden gnome. They flee, but not fast enough. You boot one with an upward arc. It tumbles head over heels into the cavern wall. Some are still firing at you. You suffer a few grazes and pricks, but pay little mind. You are in no mood. You reach down and smack an archer, sending it skittering through the glowing moss. You scoop up another, wind up, and spike it straight into the ground with all your might. There's a searing pain in your leg. You look down to see one of the little buggers twisting a blade into your calf. Shouldn't have done that. You grab it, and just like that first rat, you twist its head till it goes pop. You scrutinize the twitching body. The torso fits snug in your hand, legs dangling at the knees off your palm. Not wearing much more than a breech clout stitched together from bits of loose fabric. In your other hand, you inspect the head. It's strapped into some kind of headdress with the stub of a tallow candle fixed to the top of it. It really was a dancer with a light on its head? Weird. You drop the remains and turn to pursue the now fleeing fae folk deeper into the cave. You aren't about to just let them go. The last thing you need is to wake up roped to the cavern floor like Gulliver. From somewhere ahead, you hear high-pitched shouting and a long, loud whistling sound. Must be raising an alarm. You catch up to the stragglers just as they disappear into small holes in the mossy cave wall. You skid to a halt, then squat down, trying to peer into the little doorways. Can't make anything out. Standing up, you study the glowing green surface, trying to find any kind of evidence of, you don't know, occupation? Nothing obvious. Well, unless you want to fish around in there, you guess that's that. Can't imagine they'll be eager to mess with you anymore anyway, visions of Lilliputian counterattacks aside. Probably you should head back, to the other end of the cave at least, but you dither. It's sinking in that this debacle isn't the escape you were hoping for, and you aren't looking forward to sitting alone with that letdown. There's nothing for it. You kick a desultory clod of moss and turn to walk back. Only to be pincushioned by a bombardment of miniature arrows the moment you turn away. The fusillade catches you mostly on the back of your head and shoulders. You grab a few and yank them out. Son of a! You shout. That really smarts! You face the cave wall again, shielding your face with one forearm. Good thing, too, because you take some more arrows while you look for the archers. There you are. The little devils are ducking in and out of hides in the moss all over the wall. One way to deal with that. You see one slide behind a lump of moss about waist high. Sucks for you, guy. You hike up your leg as high as you can, your knee almost to your chin, and stomp down on the mossy bulge it hid behind. There's a high-pitched squeal, and to your surprise, your leg sinks into the wall up to the knee. You weren't ready for it, and you lose your balance. Hopping on one leg and windmilling your arms, you manage to keep from falling over. Good thing, too. More arrows pepper your flanks while you try to extricate yourself. With a final push, you're free, stumbling backwards to land on your butt a few meters away. Through the hole you kicked in the facade, you can see the more incandescent warmth of candlelight. Brighter than the surrounding cave, though not by much. The construction must be enormous. Who knows how deep it goes? All built to look like nothing more than the mossy cave wall. Impressive, really. You have a fleeting curiosity about why they might need to camouflage their dwellings to this extent when they're isolated so deep underground here. You think about the castle, the entire city, built right on top of them. They're probably just trying to get by. Then you pluck half a dozen arrows out of your arms, knowing there's more where that came from in your back, neck, and shoulders. To hell with them. You rush forward amid the screeches and wails and the rain of arrows and begin to lay waste to the wall. You smash the surface with your fists, hoping to squash the archers hiding within. Grabbing the lip of a hole you made, you pull away an entire section, then send a few screaming Feyfolk flying out into the cave with a sweep of your arm. Stomping and kicking, you make short work of them. You crash through their civilization like a kaiju, working out the terror, the frustration, hell, even the FOMO of all the time you spent shivering in the dark with only rat heads for company. Through it all, though, one feeling rises to squeeze out the others. Hunger. There are no more arrows by the time your rampage peters out. There's no sign of any of them at all. You watch the manic flickering of an internal fire somewhere deep in the construction while you catch your breath. After a while, you collect a heaping armload of bloodied bodies and stalk back to where you first entered the cavern. You're gonna eat well tonight. You awaken hungry and not quite warm in your mossy nest. The chanting of the Feyfolk drifting in that sullen, flat way from the other side of the cavern. Accompanied by their high-pitched drums, it's just a single word, a single syllable, over and over. It's the only song they make now, if you can call it that. You first heard it not long after you demolished much of their weird village. After you feasted upon the fallen you'd hauled off with you, and returned for the scattered few you missed the first time. Not long after that, just as you were approaching hungry enough to entertain a second visit, you heard it. It calls to you now, much as it did then. You get up and head over. You don't know what the word means, really. Your chip must not be able to make a direct translation. No worries, you get the gist. You're sure to them it has a specific meaning, but to you, it just means dinner. With a Pavlovian stomach growl, you quicken your pace. On the other side of the rise, you come upon them, a semicircle traced around a new construction. They must have cobbled it together out of remnants of their village, but it gets the job done. Twin pillars rise from the bare patch where you first encountered the candle-headed dancer, though the current tableau is less whimsical. From the tips of the two pillars stretch two ropes. The other ends of the two ropes are tied to one little hand apiece, fixing a single sacrificial gnome between the pillars. This is the arrangement that's been settled on. There was no discussion, no details hashed out, but it's not hard to understand. Every so often they offer you one of their own. In return, there's no need for another massacre. You're not sure you'd call that a win-win, but what is it they say about compromise? A good one leaves nobody happy. The chant reaches a fever pitch as you approach. You look at the poor wretch comprising today's menu. Not for the first time, you wonder how this particular individual was decided upon. Probably doesn't deserve it. but you do. You squat down and grab the little fae, rope snapping as you rise to make your exit. It doesn't struggle as you head back over the rise, chant fading in the distance. "Sorry," you say, as it looks up at you with wide black eyes. "I'll make it quick." You really do feel bad for it, but not enough to starve. You take the small head in your hand, feeling tiny, hot breaths panting against your palm. Besides, after the vacation I've been subjected to, you think to yourself, twisting the little neck with a snap, I've earned it.
That was Oubliette by Aaron Lund. As I mentioned at the start of the show, there is a bonus story only available to our Patreon supporters. Have a listen to this sample.
You awaken to a bright light and the muffled droning of the 24-hour news cycle blathering away on your flat screen. Your dream was of a vague sense of impending doom, but only if it caught up to you. So you were running, running. The dream is fading, the details slipping away, but the anxiety remains. You don't need to remember it, though, to know what the deal is. Half a year, more or less, and you're still stuck in that cave. You sit up and swing your feet over the edge of the bed. You breathe in and out slowly, like your psychotropic therapist said, letting the dream and the associated feeling just be there. If you don't resist it, just feel the feeling, it'll change into something else, something less terrifying all on its own. That's the idea, anyway. But you're not very good at it. You've had some success. But when the feeling is particularly strong, like now, you can't help but put your faith into distraction. You grab your phone and start scrolling through the notifications. Junk, 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 spam. Your mom left a voicemail. The first of the day, you can be sure. You appreciate it, to be sure, but don't feel up to it just now. Probably she'll bring up moving back home, just until you've got yourself together. And that conversation always leaves you in a panic. It's not that it's necessarily a bad idea. In fact, you like visiting. It's reassuring to be around people. That's why the flat screen's always on. You don't care about what's going on in the world, per se. You just need to hear people talking. And the news channels never shut up. Real people saying real words all the time. It's even better when they're actually present.
If you want to hear the rest of this story, as well as gain access to almost 200 other audio adventures, please head on over to our Patreon page by looking up the Twilight Histories. You can also go to our website and follow the link. You can find us at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.